Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the Live Issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo. We're coming to you on a very beautiful snowy day here in the Boston area. Everything looks like a Christmas card here. Of course, this would have actually been better to have during Christmas a few weeks back instead of sweating my balls off in New Hampshire, of all places. But yes, it's still pretty nice to look at. Not nice to clean up, though. Christ, we still haven't recovered from last year's winter. Remind me again why I didn't move to Florida like some of my friends did? Oh, that's right, bath salts. No bath salts up here in Boston. So yeah, I'll take the bad weather over having my face eaten off by some crazed druggie with a zombie mentality. So, get some hot cocoa ready, get under a warm blanket, and sit at your kotatsu as we begin today's playlist. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start the show with a new one from the band Grapevine, whom I first got wind of a few years back at the South by Southwest Festival, which is coming up next month. From their new album, Babble Babble, this is East of the Sun.
Taking a ball of water so right. It's a ball of nali will be so mad there. You know he down and won't crack out there. Yeah, get a yard and go show there. Coco de Mo. Yeah.
From his 2006 album Cantana number 147, that was Chiptune Extraordinaire Omodaka with Kokiri Kobushi, another performer I first heard of thanks to the South by Southwest Festival. An amazing artist, actually one of the first chiptune artists I became a fan of. And joining me right now is my good buddy Eri Kagami from Scarlet Rhapsody.
Hey guys, this is Eri Kagami broadcasting from the West Coast. How are you, Evan?
I am doing pretty good. Now, I wanted to bring Eri on the show because I had a bit of an incident occur, and I was telling her about this. Let me break down the story. So one of our friends, DJ Ranma Sautome from Anime Jam Sessions, he made a post on Facebook about Sailor Moon Crystal, and it was like a picture of him saying, like, what is it? Don't say that this series is bad just because the art is dumb. It was around those lines, correct?
Yeah, it's like one of those memes that you find on Tumblr, like Sailor Moon Confessions. And it, the long story short of it is, yes, it was, yes, don't judge Sailor Moon Crystal based on the animation quality, blah, blah, blah.
Right, and which I responded as, no, I say it's a bad show because of its poor storytelling, lack of character development, and just about everything else of it being lazy. To which our friend DJ Rama Satole asked, did you read the original manga? And then I responded, I did, and I found it to be inferior to the 90s anime. And as soon as I posted that, major shitstorm occurred. Not by DJ Rama, but by his, shall we call him the Moonies?
Yeah, Rabid Moonies.
Rabid Moonies. He's saying, how dare you? How dare you crap on the original manga? The original manga is so much better. No, it's not. And I brought you on here, Eri, because as a certified true Sailor Moon fan, the biggest I probably know, what is it with the mentality of these Moonies that they sort of have this sort of, oh, this is the ultimate form of Sailor Moon, when it really isn't?
Okay, so ever since I was a Moonie back in 1995 and just sort of following the series and following the fandom from alt-fan Sailor Moon to today, basically Sailor Moon has always had a contingency of purist, and it's purist to the extreme. And I think it's always been this way is because we've always wanted like a pure original Sailor Moon in the US, because there's a lot of people who weren't too cool with the Canadian deep dub. I kind of digress. I actually thought it was pretty decent for what they had to work with in
I agree. You know, it's what made me a fan of Sailor Moon in the first place, and I knew that the dub wasn't perfect, but for what it was able to do, for it to be able to air on Toonami, you know, I had to change certain characters that I like to you know, fit with what was okay for children to experience, I thought they did a pretty good job with it.
I agree, and they got a lot of veteran voice actors from Canada on board, including John Stalker. He was the ADR director for the first 65 episodes, and John Stalker was the voice of Toad in the Super Mario Brothers cartoon. Fun fact.
Wow, that's actually
pretty. He's also Grandpa. He's Ray's grandpa in the original 60 original deep dub too. But anyway, that's besides the point. There's always been a contingency of purism within the Sailor Moon community. There's been like websites that pretty much just like damn the the deep dub, and it also goes a lot more beyond on that. I think it's because Sailor Moon hasn't really had much of a quote unquote true translation for the first like 15 or so years of its fandom out here in the U.S. It kind of had like this purist kind of mentality. It's really hard to verbalize, but when you see it, you know that it exists, especially if you're within the community. And even when the second run of the manga was being translated, when Kodansha had the translation, people were being super nitpicky on how it was being translated. And I showed the translations to my my older brother, Stan of Plastic Ronins, and then he's like, yeah, I've seen like worse translation errors in Naruto, but a lot of them weren't much of a big deal. And if you remember, the second translation run of the Kodansha comics was the true word translation of the manga, because when Tokyo Pop had it, they still kept it with the Dedeek names, Dedeek transformations, and they kind of took some liberties with just the way they worded things. But the Kodansha one was like, okay, here's the true form of the manga, have at it. And that's what I wanted for a while. I wanted to support the product. I wanted to give money to Kodansha. But anywho, you're always going to have people very super nitpicky about how Sailor Moon is translated and how Sailor Moon is presented. I was at a panel a couple years ago, and we were just debating over the tiniest things. Like, come on. I mean, you know, as a fan, like, you have, like, the whole super fan mentality. But this panel, they were going over, like, what is the term Sailor Guardian versus Sailor Soldier? And like,
or even Sailor Scout.
Yeah. And, like, come on, guys. No, they were just focusing more on, like, oh, is it Sailor Soldier or Sailor Guardians? Like, this is why we like Sailor Soldiers and why we diss on Sailor Guardians. I'm like, okay, guys, that's a little bit...
We like that double S.
Yeah. And, like, what is a Senshi, really? Like, I always just assumed that was, like, Sailor Warrior or Sailor Soldier. And if you... I don't really care what you translate it to at this point, because I'm like, yeah. I don't want to go into, like, hour-long debates on, like...
I just call it Senshi. I feel like Senshi is its own thing at this point, because when
I feel that way, too. Like, just call them Senshi. I mean, if you're... Don't, like, waste your brain cells on Guardian versus Soldier. Come on.
Yeah.
But, anywho, enough horror stories on that, but let's dig into... What's up with the Sailor Moon Crystal fandom? Oh my god.
I mean, I stopped watching it 13 episodes in because I had had enough. I was like, this is boring, this is dull, the characters that I like have zero personality in this version. And then I come to find out that this was, like, when I was reading the manga, this is how they were portrayed in. And I'm like... The 90s anime added so much to these characters that made them more likable than they were in the manga. And what I don't understand is, why is it that the fandom seems to be all up on this whole one-dimensional perception of the characters in Crystal and in the manga, compared to these fully fleshed-out characters that are in the original anime?
In general, you know, you have people who always feel like, oh, it's the original source material. Oh, the books, blah, 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 are going to be superior to whatever it's adapted into. I feel that notion can be perceived... Deceived in a way kind of false, because there are, like, books that I read that were turned into movies. Like, for example, The Godfather, I found the movies to be superior to the book. The manga for Sailor Moon, like, yeah, it is pretty pictures. It's pretty pictures to look at for its time. It was a product of the early 90s to the mid 90s. And, like, yeah, there were a couple things that I really did like. I do like the artwork. I do like some of the side stories. I do like how the last arc is a swan song, and I do like how in one of the arcs you see the Sailor Senshi fight in their princess variations. Like, yeah, I'd love to see that done in animated form. However, when you take something, I'll say this right now, and Moody's, feel free to crucify me. Sailor Moon, I mean, Naoko Takeuchi is the George Lucas of the anime industry.
Right, and you've made that point to me many times, so explain to our listeners what you mean by this, because I know what it means, but explain to them what it means.
Okay, so if any of you follow Star Wars, George Lucas, when he was directing the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, in 1977, a lot of it had to be saved through editing by his former wife, because the original 1977 Star Wars just was so boring and was so bland, so they did a lot of editing to get to where it was. So if you, like, Google Star Wars was saved in editing, you can get a lot of stories about that. Flash forward to the late 90s when he had the Star Wars prequels. George Lucas had a ton of creative control. He was pretty much running the whole show, and he was pretty much saying, like, oh, whatever I say goes. And the results were the Star Wars prequels, which by many Star Wars fans was pretty bland and pretty lifeless.
Yeah.
Sounds like Sailor Moon Crystal.
Right, exactly.
However, the other part of it was when you have like other creative people working on a huge franchise, you get more ideas involved, you get more things fleshed out, you start seeing things like from another angle. So I would say that Junichi Sato and to a certain extent Kunihiko Ikuhara,
yep,
were like the J.J. Abrams of and Lawrence Kasdan of the Sailor Moon franchise.
Right.
What they brought to the table with the 90s cartoon was they brought in some new ideas, and a lot of what you see with Uranus and Neptune in the third season was all of Ikuhara's doing, and that's something you're not going to see in Crystal. I've read the Infinity Arc of Sailor Moon, and it's like, yeah, Uranus and Neptune there are just kind of flirting around with Usagi and Mamoru, but when you compare the third arc of the manga with Sailor Moon S, Sailor Moon S has a stronger, deeper development between Uranus and Neptune. Like, you're not going to get that hand-holding scene. You're not going to get the self-sacrifice scene in Infinity. I don't know what they're going to do with this, but it looks like they're going to go follow chapter by chapter for the Infinity / Deathbusters arc. But I really do believe that I really do believe that a lot of what really made the 90s Sailor Moon what it is, and how it is such a collective memory, like a lot of us, especially those who grew up in the 90s, were saved because of Ikuhara and Junichi Sato's decisions to like really flesh out the characters. And now you have Crystal, where Naoko Takeuchi is in complete creative control. It's pretty much the manga, pretty much straightforward, and there's not a lot of life with the characters. I mean, yes, no, you do have Kotano brought back as Sailor Moon, but even I feel that her performance, it just seems like a huge miscast, because the Usagi in Crystal and Usagi in Bishoujo Senshi Sailor Moon, I just feel are two completely different characters. Like, Usagi is a lovable goofball. Like, she's there for her friends. She balances her time, especially between friends and having a boyfriend. Here, it just feels like, yeah, I'm Usagi. I, like, want to be a princess. I guess I can save the world with my doe eyes. I think I have friends, yeah. But, yeah, I'm totally banging Mamoru, like, even though my friends are being captured and all. And I was really hoping they would just add more to Sailor Moon Crystal. I mean, it's fine to me if you add like a couple of episodes for like a filler arc or an arc where you really see the characters fleshed out, because I really want to believe that they're friends. Because when I was interviewing the Canadian dub actors for Sailor Moon, they said, one of them, I believe it was Katie Griffin, said like the best part about being involved with Sailor Moon is you have like these five different girls who wouldn't be friends otherwise, and you had like different they all had different personalities.
Right.
Like, you could be sporty like Jupiter, you could be posh as, oh my god, I can't believe I'm saying this. You can be posh as like Mars or Venus. I can do this. Or you can be as scary as Mars when she's having a bad temper. Yeah, I went there.
Yeah.
But anywho, the point is you have like these five different characters who are friends, and each girl can relate to them. And I feel like I can't relate to these characters, especially when they're on the ground the most of the time, or they're being captured. Like in the second season of Sailor Moon Crystal, you have the Senshi, like, okay, another character arc episode kind of thing. They get a new power up, but then they get captured
again.
And I mean, like, okay, what? It just, I don't know, it just, I would just was really never a fan of that. And the older I get, the more I'm not a huge fan of just seeing strong female characters such as a Sailor Senshi being captured and not unable to hold their own. And I really wish they
did something about
that. Because remember, I liked the manga for what it was, because it was a product of the early 90s, but I feel like in the 2010s, we're beyond that.
Yeah.
We're so much more beyond that.
Right.
Maybe I'm just talking from an American perspective, but even if you look at other shoujo anime aimed towards children, like Go Princess Pretty Cure, like they play on the tropes even though it is a very princessy themed. Being a princess also means being able to strong and being able to defend your people. So they always push the whole, like, you gotta also be kind of physically strong too, and also emotionally strong. And like, even though Go Princess Pretty Cure does have a prince character, he is not the center of the main girl's world. Like, the main girl, yes, she wants to be a princess, but there's other aspects of being a princess: being kind, being very well-rounded and very cultured, being physically strong, being able to defend your people, and friendship. And I think those are great themes to have in a children's show. And when you compare that to some of the older shoujo, like, yeah, I mean, we've come a long way. And I'm using children's shoujo. I think it's unfair to use something like Madoka to compare Sailor Moon Crystal to, because Madoka was more of a postmodern take on shoujo, and not so much aimed towards little girls. But
I'd rather
kind of keep it fair.
Well, how would you compare it to something like Revolutionary Girl Utena? Or is that another unfair comparison?
Utena, Crystal to Utena?
Yeah.
I don't think that's would be a right comparison. I do classify Utena as shoujo, but it's so many different things all at once. Like, Utena is its own category.
Yeah.
A lot of what really made Sailor Moon S, one of the reasons why a lot of fans love it so much, it was a lot of it was Ikuhara's direction and decisions where to take Uranus and Neptune.
Yeah, and they made, and he wound up making him much better characters. Like, I always have said that, like, all right, so I always joke that Sailor Venus is my waifu, but Uranus and Neptune have always been my favorite Sailor Senshi, because they were just, not only were they just so badass, but they were so much a better couple than Usagi and Mamoru could ever be.
I've always been more of a Team Seiya person, but that's just me. Like, yeah, granted, the 90s anime did have its flaws. Like, there was that added BS storyline about Mamoru being challenged by his future self to love Usagi or else. I mean, to break up with Usagi or else. I thought that was a BS storyline. And the romance between Mamoru and Usagi in the original 90s cartoon was like, eh. And you kind of want to root for Seiya a lot more towards the end. And I do love me some Seiya. However, this was really fleshed out and really fixed up in Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon, the live-action tokusatsu series. I mean, there is this scene where Usagi and Mamoru are, like, on the beach, and it was just after a fight from the Dark Kingdom. And then they're like, yeah, you know what? Because of our past, if we're here together in the present, we're probably going to be doomed as we were in the past. But they're like, eh, fuck it. Let's be together anyway. And I like that.
No, I totally agree. And, like, that's not in existence in Crystal or in the manga. You don't get that sort of mentality. You don't get that sort of emotion that is contained in the 90s anime compared to the original source material or, you know, what's going to wind up happening in Sailor Moon Crystal.
What I think Toei should have done is, I did like the Moon Pride music video, and I would have been fine if Toei just wanted to do like a 20th anniversary, paying more homage to scenes from the manga, if they did like a 5-minute or even an 8-minute music video highlighting each story arc in the manga, because you can totally do that without worrying about character development, because they did that for, well, I forgot who the studio was, but they did that for Clamp and Wonderland. And I think
that was Madhouse.
Okay, my bad. But I think if they really wanted to do something for the 20th anniversary and just cover, like, the manga, I think they should just done like a long form music video covering each story arc, because you can get some really cool scenes out of that. Like I said, in the last arc, Sailor Stars, in the manga, it's this entire swan song, and if you can just, like, condense that to, like, maybe an 8-minute music video, I would have been fine I would have been fine with that, because clearly Toei is focusing more effort and energy with a lot of their other properties, giving them more quality animation, whereas Sailor Moon Crystal, like, you're on a 2-week schedule and everything is all rushed. Granted, the animation can be fixed in post, as many anime is fixed in post for the DVD and Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
I mean, I can totally forgive that. I mean, that's not a big deal to me, because, like, yeah, it happened with Attack on Titan. And like what you said, the main problem Sailor Moon Crystal has, it lacks character development, and I don't know, just the story is not as fleshed out as, yeah.
No, and I totally agree with you, and this is what I was trying to figure out with the fan base that were attacking me because of me saying that the 90s anime was superior. And my question is, why can't they see that? Why don't they? Is it because they feel like Takeuchi's original work, that they just see it as like the one true interpretation, and they just want to pretend that the 90s anime doesn't exist, and they even know how good it really is?
Yeah, again, there's always going to be a contingency of purism and elitism, especially within the Sailor Moon community, and I have no idea why the purism is more stronger than, like, any other fandom I've noticed. Like, you don't get this with Cardcaptor Sakura.
No, which, by the way, has been hinting that they're doing something for their 20th anniversary, and I am kind of crossing my fingers that they do, like, a sort of, like, new series to reintroduce it to people. But I hope they do it more in the same way of, and I was going to bring this up, I mean, look at what they did with when they brought back Lupin the Third this fall. It was perfect. It was awesome. The characters, the music, the voice acting, the storylines, it was all very Lupin, all very exciting. Why couldn't they have done something like that with the reboot of Sailor Moon?
Agreed. And there's been, like, a lot of anime that has been getting, like, a lot of reboots that I've really been enjoying. Like, even when I wrote my article on the problem I have with the Sailor Moon Crystal Phantom, I do allude to JoJo's Bizarre Adventures. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, they are following the original source material. However, they've also been adding, like, just little things here and there, just to sort of, like, just flesh things out more or add more story, but not detracting from the manga. I mean, that's what I thought what Crystal's gonna be. Like, yeah, you'll use Crystal as a guideline, but now it's so shot for shot. It's like, okay, like, what else you got? Because I really feel that Crystal doesn't really add much to the Sailor Moon universe, because usually when you reintroduce something, you also want to add something a lot more, give the fans something a lot more to think about, if that makes any sense.
No, that totally makes sense.
And when you think about, and there's been, like, some really awesome anime reboots that come out in the past couple of years. Like, I really enjoy the Lupin one, JoJo's Bizarre Adventures, Saint Seiya Mega, to name a few. But I don't know, like, as big as a Mooney as I am, I just was really disappointed with Sailor Moon Crystal, and I honestly really want to like it. I really wanted to defend it, but because it's just, by the time I got to the Queen, when it got to Queen Metalia, it's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah, like, just period. I just don't want to deal with it anymore. I mean, you know, give props to Toei for trying to bring it back for a new generation, but they could have easily just did a remastering, which they did with Sailor Moon, and, you know, we got the remastering here in America. I just couldn't understand why they just didn't just do a special re-airing of all 200 episodes on, like, television or something like that to celebrate it. Mm-hmm. Not trying to sweep it under the rug, like what they might. Well, I know they're not sweeping it under the rug, but, oh, here's a brand new version of Sailor Moon that's nice and sparkly and shiny. I hope you like it more than the original version. And the general consensus so far has been, nope.
Also, the other thing I'll give to Sailor Moon Crystal is, because it's the 20th anniversary and Crystal, we've been getting a lot more Sailor Moon merchandise, which I'm totally cool with.
Until you're, like, flat broke because of all the stuff that you buy.
That's true. I mean, like, yeah, some stuff are, like, a little bit on the pricey side. Like, some of the Sailor Moon-inspired tra-la-la outfits that are probably won't gonna fit me because I have American sizing. However, there are figures that like I do want to collect. There are like little jewelry pieces I want to collect. They have like Sailor Moon style cameo necklaces. However, there are some questionable items in the queue that I probably wouldn't get, but I'm like, really? Sailor Moon lingerie by, I forgot what the name of the company was. It was like JonTron or something.
Yeah, so, no, JonTron is something totally different. I think.
Oh, okay. I take it that the. Oh, yeah. It's still early out here out west. Anywho. But JonTron presents lingerie. I went right. by JonTron and see Sailor Venus lingerie now. Just show up at Mac. I was like, hey, JonTron. I forgot what the name of the company was, but they like manufactured Sailor Moon lingerie, which looks more like Lamb Chops underwear. I don't know. When I think lingerie, I think sexy, and this was totally sexy. But it was weird how they advertised it. They got these, I'm sure they are of age in Japan, mm-hmm. but they were like just wearing the Sailor Senshi lingerie and just kind of like just posing and looking bored. I'm like, okay. Like, yeah, is our shoot done yet?
Yeah. Well, at the very least, I know that we've been bashing on Crystal. At least we can say it's still better than the more recent Sailor Moon musicals that we've had to sit through and watch.
That's true. Oh my god.
So let's
I'd
leave
rather
that
watch in. Hamilton, thank you very much.
Or what's that new one? Something Rotten.
Yes, Something Rotten.
Yeah.
I still need to see Book of Mormon. Shame on me.
Really? I've seen it twice. It's awesome.
No one wants to watch it with me.
Why? It's South Park and Avenue Q guys making a musical about Mormonism. That's not, well, it is kind of poking fun of Mormonism, but it's actually done in a really good way.
I have, a lot of my friends are broke and can't afford to see a Broadway show.
You see, you gotta come back up here in the Boston area to move back in here so we can go see more Broadway shows together, okay?
Road trip to New York!
Yes! Because what's coming from Japan? Those that all-female troupe is coming.
Yeah, I think that's like a one-night thing only in at the Lincoln Center, though.
Yeah, I think it is, too.
But I am quite curious because Takarazuka out in Japan, they've also done West Side Story, Copa Cabana in Japanese. I'm not kidding. It's just funny just watching all these Takarazuka people singing Barry Manilow. Oh, they also did Takarazuka Singing in the Rain. So it was really awkward seeing like this, hearing the like sing, make them laugh.
Yeah. Oh, that's
interesting. I'm really showing my gay side right now anyway.
All right. Yeah. But thank you very much, Ari, for coming on to No Borders Erased to help us with this whole Sailor Moon fandom fiasco that people seem to be not understanding why it's happening. So tell our listeners more about where they can find out about Scarlet Rhapsody.
Okay, you can find us online at scarlet-rhapsody.net. We cover anime conventions and post the occasional opinion editorial on fandom culture. You can also find us on Facebook if you search for Scarlet Rhapsody. You can follow us on Twitter at Scarlet Rhapsody. And that's that. Oh, yeah, and subscribe to our iTunes. We have podcasts and stuff on anime conventions, pop culture, video games, and more.
And you'll be coming on to Anime Boston, of course, for next month.
I am looking forward to Anime Boston. It's like, what, like 43 days left or something like that? 40 days, 40 nights?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still waiting to hear back from our Steven Universe panel. We're doing a Steven Universe panel, but we're covering the hidden gems of anime within Steven Universe. See what I did there?
Yes.
However, we do have a Loop on the Third panel that has been approved, and a Carl Masek, Frenemy of Anime panel also approved.
Interesting. That sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we come back, just to give my listeners just a bit of just a quick heads up. For the next segment you're going to hear, I had a bit of a mishap with the microphone, so I'm going to sound very, very echoey. And that was totally unintentional when you hear it. But right now, we're actually going to spin a song that Ari herself is going to introduce because it's a song that she wanted me to spin on this program.
Hi, the reason why I wanted this song on the program is I went to Otakon Vegas not too long ago, and I was introduced to this K-pop song by FX called Electric Shock during the cosplay Lip Sync for Your Life. It's been on my Otakon Vegas 2016 playlist. So here it is, FX with Electric Shock.
Listening to Hot with Hunter, the best in rhythm and blues records on the original 24-hour station KFGJ, Los Angeles.
You can call it rhythm and blues or rock and roll, but here is one that's a hit under any name.
real name may be Tatsuya Oe, but everyone calls him Captain Funk from his 1998 EP Bustin' Loose. That was Twist and Shout. I came across this killer dance track thanks to a brand new online radio station based on that awesome video game series, Jet Set Radio. So please do yourselves a favor and bookmark jetsetradio.live, as it's perfect for any party. And right now, I am joined by two of my biggest Fire Emblem hardcore fans out there. First and foremost, we have the hard man with harder opinions, Andrew Fleming from Wicked Anime.
Hello.
And lastly, we got the king of all issues and the only theater major that I know that doesn't like the show Gallivant, Phil the Issues Guy.
Oh my god, it reminds me too much of Robin Hood Men in Tights. But it's very good to be here today, King Baby Duck and Andrew. I'm good, excited to talk about some Fire Emblem today.
Yes.
Me too.
And now the bad thing about this is we're going to be talking something that's kind of raised an eyebrow for us in the realm of the Fire Emblem, specifically the westernization of Fire Emblem Fates. Where,
quote unquote, westernization.
Yeah.
Of all Fire Emblem games, quote unquote.
Yeah. Where they're taking out things that made the upcoming Fire Emblem Fates game something a little bit special, but for some reason, the American and the European versions aren't going to have these specific parts, one of which is a very important part of the storyline.
You just want to pet somebody. Is that really what you want to do? You just want to pet someone in a video game is what it really comes down to.
But that's the thing. There are other games that have this sort of pet thing that are rated T that aren't released by Nintendo, but I don't understand why they have to take it out of here.
There's tons of Pokemon porn on the website, so people are attracted to Pokemon, but they didn't take that petting feature out of Pokemon X and Y, did they?
No.
Sick freaks.
That Raichu spread eagle shot. Oh, that was ridiculous. Oh my god, I felt so embarrassed for Pikachu that he's like, I'm going to evolve into that? Oh, golly. Oh my goodness. I hear what you're saying, Evan, and I do want to cut you off a little bit from the sense of, and I think this is something when you were sending messages back and forth between the three of us and talking to both Andrew and I.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised about this, because when it really comes down to it, all in all, from the beginning of time, even since its inception, Fire Emblem has always been I don't even know the correct expression. I wasn't going to say the redheaded stepchild or just of Nintendo of America. They don't really feel they have to care and give the same experience to the Japanese and the American audience with the Fire Emblem series. And more than any other Nintendo of their big franchises, this is the one that probably gets the knife the most throughout history.
Yeah,
I agree.
One of the issues that I always see too is that so I have a huge problem with internet journalism, and I'm not talking about like podcast shows and opinion pieces and whatever, but when you have people on the internet who quote-unquote claim to be, hey, we're a web journalist and we're super professional and stuff, websites like Kotaku and IO9 and anyone else who likes to claim that, hey, we're professional but we also like to use curse words in our articles.
Yeah.
They have a certain audience that they essentially bring in everybody who is, they say, hey, we have this opinion. And then everybody else shows up and they're like, we have this opinion as well. And then they have a big circle jerk about how they all have the same opinion and how everybody should share their opinion and how, you know, hey, feminazism this, and hey, racial cards this, and, you know, all this stuff should be taken out and banned. It offends me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's been around in this country since the Quakers and the Puritans, and it's making a big resurgence these days because craziness or whatever kind of thought patterns, it's that preaching from a box, the mob mentality. An old teacher of mine used to call it that we live now in the virtual coliseum, essentially, where now someone can shout out from the middle, yes, we can, no sexuality, no this, that. And what it really comes down to with the Fire Emblem game and with everything that gets taken away from it, I'm surprised more wasn't cut from the game. I'm glad that they decided to at least keep a couple things. And Nintendo, to their defense, their comment about this is, we didn't decide to change this game. We just know we're going to get backlash from the American media for whatever that's worth. And we don't want to go through that crap. Sorry.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, deal with the backlash. You're still going to make so much money on Fire Emblem Fates. Who cares what 1 out of 1 million people are going to be offended out of?
One voice can break a lot of windows if it's tuned into the right key. Continue, Andrew. That was basically it.
Okay. Well, I was going to say is, but you also have to remember that Nintendo absolutely hates money. Because if Nintendo loved money, then they would sell more copies of the Fire Emblem Fates Special Edition to GameStop rather than just saying, hey, here's 10 copies per store. Oh, what? You got 50 pre-orders? You got 100 pre-orders for it? You have to cancel those for them.
And this goes back to what I was saying as my main point earlier. Nintendo not only hates money, they really do hate Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem is something that they probably never would have brought to this country. And I mean, there's different reports. They brought an anime before the games ever got brought here. So people that are into the genre were familiar with some of the characters, or not the characters, familiar with the storyline or the style. And then in Smash Brothers,
Melee came over,
that is why essentially Nintendo's like, oh, people are curious about these characters, let's bring them over. And then every time that they brought a game over or thought about it, they completely bastardized it to a certain extent. And even to further that on, in the last game, in what I'm blanking on the name of it,
can I need your help out on this?
The game for the Game Boy, Radiant. No, what the fuck?
No, you were close.
Path of Radiance?
Something like that.
Or something. The most recent Fire Emblem game that just came out before Fates. They just all blend together for me for some reason.
Awakening.
I'm talking about Awakening.
Oh, you're talking about Awakening. Okay.
Before Awakening came out, Nintendo said to the Fire Emblem team that you need to sell 250,000 copies of this or we're never doing another Fire Emblem game before. They don't make those kind of statements to other franchises on the Nintendo circle here. They don't just say, oh, you need to do this. And you know what it sold? It sold almost 2 million copies. People got scared that there was not going to be any more Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem is a concept in a style of game that some people listening to this that aren't familiar with it. It's a tactical strategy role-playing game. Some people may have played, because it gets a little bit more fanfare, the Shining Force games. It's not the same kind of game, but think like that to a certain point, like a chess role-playing game. It's a unique thing, and it's something that I don't get anywhere else from anywhere, and I wish Nintendo would show them more love.
It's very tactical, and that's my favorite kind of gameplay, is tactical RPG, the game where you have to be smarter than your opponent, because if you beat a level, it means you've outsmarted the enemy.
A great example of that would be like the Disgaea series, which has done a great job with that.
And the first one, or one of the ones that I played that not a lot of people also play, was Agarus War. Have you ever played Record of Agarus War?
I have, actually. My friend Devin played it, and I watched him before. Yeah.
So it's the tactical RPG and a dating sim.
Yep.
And so your main character ends up with one of the female protagonists, and then you have a child, and that child's carries on the mix of the two stats, and that continues on the story.
That's interesting you say that, because Fire Emblem has also adopted that in the later, where two characters get together and have a kid that share equal powers. It really adds to the replay value of the games. And I do want to mention one thing, just to show. Some Fire Emblem games in the past, some of the Japan versions of this have had this mode, but it was very buried, and they took it out once they had it in there once. But another thing that got changed for American audiences, because a big factor in Fire Emblem is in these big battles, as Andrew was talking about, that so much tactics go into it, and you put so much into these battles. Part of that reason why is, historically in the game, when you lose your characters, they're gone. You can't use them anymore.
Right, yeah. It's like the XCOM games. Like, once those characters are dead, they're dead forever.
They're dead. And in the last few versions, they have added a casual mode. In Fates, they've added something called Phoenix mode. Which I'm pissed off about. Like,
see, I'm actually okay with casual mode.
Yeah.
Because it you can still lose.
Yep.
But and casual mode allows people who, because I'm trying, I actually enjoy casual mode because I enjoy my characters and I like to hear their extended stories. Now, granted, when they die in battle, I still like to start over because I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
But it at least gives me that cushion. But Phoenix mode, Like, that's insane. Like, your character comes back on the next turn?
Yeah.
That's,
what? How do you even lose?
That's just Game Genie what? Right there.
Yeah, that is Game Genie. What other RPG has ever done something like that? That makes no sense.
It's just this really, really baby stepping it, holding your hand through it. And I agree with Andrew. By the end of my Awakenings playthroughs in my latter half, I was definitely playing casual mode all the time. But I'm similar that if I die in the battle in casual mode, I usually just restart from the beginning of the battle and go, what did I do wrong?
Yeah, but there must be a better way.
But just in case it's a really hard battle and at the end, like, you know, you place one person in the wrong space and they get killed from behind, you're like, oh my god, I was training that mage for so long and so squishy and they just got hit by a knight I didn't see coming.
Yeah. I mean, by the end of Awakening, I could just put my character, I named him Czar, and my waifu, which was Sully. So I could, by the end of Fire Emblem Awakening, I could put them as the only two characters on the map.
Yeah,
and tag team them together, and then just run them through the map and just ruin like the entire army. Like they were so strong.
I agree though so much that casual mode is awesome, and I was kind of similar way towards the. I love when you're so powerful in that game and you're just running through people.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that's still fun to kind of walk through it, and they always have the maniac modes, or at least in the Japanese releases, those really hardcore versions.
Yeah.
Sort of brought that to the United States as well in later games. But ultimately, with Phoenix mode, which is honestly the thing I'm more upset about the inclusion of Phoenix mode in general than I am on some of the stuff that cut to the United States, because I feel like Phoenix mode is just cheating.
I mean, I can understand if it was like, oh, this is for brand new players, it's like for young players who still don't understand the gameplay, but this is a T-rated game.
And King, to go off that point, because I was just about to say this, yeah, you could say, oh, it's for kids, but okay, Nintendo has another franchise that I'm pretty sure is mostly for kids. It's called Pokemon, and I'm pretty sure the Pokemon does not freaking do that. I'm pretty sure.
No.
I mean, yes, you can revive them.
Thank you. You're absolutely right.
But, you know, you're dealing with a kids' game right there, essentially, and they don't handhold like that.
Yeah, so back to the issue at hand and, like, ripping content out now. That I kind of want to talk about.
Yeah, we're talking about the potion scene right now, correct?
The what?
The potion scene.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can. Let's go right into it. Let's go right into that issue.
So there was some controversy about what your character slipping a potion into a woman's drink secretly, making her see girls as boys, and vice versa. Now, a lot of people were saying, no, this, oh, wait, is this like a gay conversion sort of thing?
When, again, Kotaku, IO9, Jezebel,
right.
Etc.
Where the reality is, the character isn't a lesbian, she just has a much better time with chatting.
She has an admiration. Specifically what the description says is she has an admiration for beautiful women, which has no attractiveness or sexual connotation to it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
She admires beautiful women, and when she is around them, she gets nervous. That's it. That is her character. And so your character is there to set up the issue of, hey, I'm gonna help you talk to women. See, now where the downfall to this goes is, yes, he slipped something into her drink, which is not okay.
Right.
Never do that.
Yeah.
Never slip anything into anyone's drinks, no matter who they are.
Don't pull a Cosby.
We're all waiting to pull that trigger, Evan. I'm glad you were the one. I was waiting for a Jell-O pudding pop joke to come up, but it wasn't.
I feel like, I mean, obviously you would notice this. You would notice that all the women were changing into men. So, your main character has no ill intentions. I mean, there's no, like, I'm not going to rape you involved.
Did they take out of Harry Potter in the movies when Hermione turns herself into a guy or something to ingrain herself more? I'm saying, like, I don't get why. This would piss me off, too, because it seems like, as Andrew was saying, this is the misunderstanding of what happens in the actual game, and that the press is running with this.
Yes.
Oh, Cosby's popular, so let's. It's dropping someone in someone's drink and this is weird sexuality and blah blah blah, when really it's ultimately more of just a way of communicating to get more information and the character feeling more comfortable with someone of the certain sex.
Yes,
the Fire Emblem games aren't overtly sexual. There are some highbrow or maybe blue humor at times, you could say.
Yep.
But they're never, if the sexuality is part of it, it's more part of a bigger mission or it's important to the story. It's not like they just throw it in there for shock and awe. Oh, let's see Samus's breasts or something. That's it.
Okay, because I was going to say, because the point of characters interacting with each other is they fall in love with each other.
Exactly.
And that's what makes it so beautiful, is because, you know, like, oh, like, they add this extra element to this game where they make you care. They make you actually care about the characters that are in your army. And then, you know, they give you children, which makes you, it gives you an extra thing to care about.
Just a fanboy for a second, and it's really amazing, and you can't, this cheapens and undersells how good the Fire Emblem series, through, except for a few games that did this, without voice acting, without live actual movies you're watching for the most part. I mean, you see these character interactions through dialogue boxes, and through the writing, and through the even the music, and how everything connects, it really does create these real emotional relationships. I'm more emotionally affected by a Fire Emblem game than I am by the average game. So for them to take things out without understanding and knowing the reasons why, I am totally on board. That really upsets me more than a lot of the other things that they're taking out content. There's just no reason for that. I understand a mini game, you take that out because you don't want bad press of like, no one's gonna take that seriously.
So the thing that I'm saying as well is, kind of piggybacking off what you said, is I'm gonna know, like, as a kind of a game completionist, like, sure, they're taking stuff out and they're not ruining the story. The story is still there, and we can still get the full quote-unquote experience, but just knowing that there is something missing that other people get to play that I do not, that's a problem.
That is
true. No, that is true.
You were so, and that's the thing that's honestly pissed me off from the very beginning about the Fire Emblem series in general. Just a quick side story, that I first played the Fire Emblem series because I had a friend of mine whose parents got a divorce and their dad lived in Japan, so he brought over a Famicom. So this kid actually had one. So he was playing that. I was like, oh, what's this game? And I watched him play. I'm like, this is amazing. Why can't I own this game? And it just pissed me off from the very beginning that just to take away content. I just don't quite understand that. And I agree with you. As a completionist, that feeling to me, more than just the game, more than anything, the feeling that somebody else somewhere is enjoying an element of content from a franchise that I love, really just, it gives me that uncomfortable feeling.
Right. Yeah. It's not like they're changing a costume like they did with Final Frame or Xenoblade Chronicles X. This is them taking out an aspect of a game that plays an important role as to how your characters develop with other characters.
Yeah. Just to fanboy myself as well, to kind of put it into perspective, I bought an $180 copy of Fire Emblem Awakening, like, because awesome. I bought my 3DS for Fire Emblem Awakening. I saw all the previews for Fire Emblem Awakening like flooding in, and I was just like, I must have that game. Yep. Like, I was seeing it, I was like, I must have that game. And so after I played it, I felt like I was cared for, like, as a player. Like, I was like, this game company made this game with the player in mind.
Absolutely.
Like, they care for me. And so yeah, like, I was like, oh, you know, yeah, sure, that sucks that we don't get to have a petting mini game. Yeah, that sucks. But you know what really sucks is the fact that it's just like, we can't be treated like adults here in America because somebody might get offended.
Yeah, someone might.
Do I have to say the three initials of the certain aspect of people who kind of ruined it for us?
it's so true though. In the Fire Emblem series is just, it's such a beautiful thing that we've missed out on so much of here in America. And I agree with you about Awakenings, and that connects to what I was talking about earlier, where because they thought at Intelligent Systems, they thought that Fire Emblem, that Awakenings may be the last game in the franchise. So more than any other game I've ever played, I agree with you. You can feel so much love from the game company to you in Awakenings. They just give you everything. And they said they even put more things than they initially wanted to, because they just wanted to give the player everything they could possibly think about.
Well, I mean, like, just that ending alone, like, you play the game and, like, so, and every single character in your army tells you what, how good of a job you did. And then not only that, but while the credits are rolling, it tells you what happens to every character in their after story. And not only that, but if two characters got married, it tells you what they did together. Like, it was just like, what?
And what's so amazing is this all came from a concept that wasn't originally even supposed to be a game. You guys can probably help me on the pronunciation of it because I'm going to kill the world word, but it was originally like a doujin project.
Doujin.
Which was basically just something that the people within the company themselves played, and they never thought it was going to be released. It was just something that they enjoyed as a game they played themselves. And it's just... it influenced so many other games. Final Fantasy created a whole tactics series copying what this game did. And it came out before Shining Force 1, so you got it. They say, oh no, there's no similarity. Yeah, bullshit that there's no similarity. You absolutely were influenced by Fire Emblem. And then one of the main creators, went off to create a PlayStation game series that Nintendo had to sue him because they're like, wait a second, this is exactly like Fire Emblem, and they won the case. So Fire Emblem's hugely influential, and where it came from is just so remarkable to me that it's some of the best ideas in game.
It basically created a whole RPG genre that never existed. Yeah,
the tactical.
Absolutely.
The tactical. Ooh, my favorite.
Me too. And that's what is so amazing to me, that something by accident, it's usually the way, if you look at things historically, at least, that there's some magic to it that you just, like basketball or something. Like, it just had to get out there. It starts... you know, in the woods, and it just eventually just makes its way to the city, so to speak. And it's really, or the other way around, depending on where your ideal location finishes. Yeah. It could go from the city to the woods. But I just think it's amazing considering where it came from.
Yeah. So then I do want to mention that I, even with these like tiny little issues that we get, and, like, yes, we're complaining about it a little bit, but we're giving so much love to Fire Emblem. I am so excited for Fates. Like, to the point where I have it marked on the calendar at work, in a public workspace. I have it on my calendar. Fire Emblem Fates is coming out on this day, and it is going to be mailed to me, and I plan to buy every single DLC expansion, like, within it. I want to get all those map packs, and, yeah. So, yeah,
that's you telling your coworkers, I'm not going to be here for the next month, so goodbye.
They've been hearing about Fire Emblem Fates since it was, like, only 1 month until Fire Emblem Fates, and even before that, so.
Just to piggyback on something Andrew was saying earlier, though, I don't understand the mindset of... You could say, oh yeah, they're trying to make more money by selling two different versions of it, but I think there should be more than... This is something that I have a problem with Nintendo in general on, because they want to create hype, and either they get it and they want to feed into this, or they don't get it. That because there's so few collector editions that have the whole thing in one giant game, and then everything like that, they're going to be bought up by scalpers that are go on eBay and sell for ridiculous prices. If you released more of them, it would not be an issue. Then, yeah, GameStop would eventually have to sell them on the shelves, some of them that wouldn't sell, but who really gives a bloody hell? Just get more. Don't create this madness.
Why do you think I'm so happy that I was able to grab a friggin' Pip-Boy for Fallout 4? Because I knew that if I didn't grab it right when it went on, it would be taken by scalpers and put on eBay for hundreds of bucks.
The special edition went on sale in November, and I didn't know until, like, I don't know, late December, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Dude,
like,
there was the same way. Yep.
Yeah, there was no announcement for it. I was pissed.
They don't even mention it in the Nintendo Directs, and I watched the freaking Nintendo Direct.
It came with an art book. Like, an art book.
A beautiful, like, art book. I'm like, so upset.
Though Awakening is getting the art book released not too long from now. They're releasing an Awakening art book separately. So I'm going to get that.
Love it.
It came with a carrying case for your 3DS XL, an art book, and one game cartridge with all three games already installed on it. And wow. And the third game, I can't, like, ooh, they finally revealed what Revelations is, and it's the path that you take if you choose neither side. And I was like, no way.
The lonesome side.
It's just unbelievable that they're giving us this kind of game and this kind of treatment of I just mean, I, that's why I wish that it was all in one package, because I kind of like to have it all in one game, and you get an art book and all that stuff. But just the fact of showing you the good side, the bad side, and then the nothing side, you know, the middle side, it's just so incredible, and it's so much detail, and it's, and again, a trademark of what I love about the series. And you can go back, and I was playing last night one of the Game Boy Advanced versions on my bricked Wii on my television, and it's just, even then, it seems like they just, you know, they tidy it up, but from the very beginning, right around the second or third game in the series, they really got this concept, and it's just, they just keep adding more layers to a really tasty cake.
Yeah. And now, yeah, because now your character is the main character. Like, yep. That's exciting to me.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like a side character that's helping out the actual main character. You are the focus of the game.
And the thing is, too, is even though Crom was the main character, technically, of Fire Emblem Awakening, I still felt like my character was more important. You know, I was just like, my character could beat Crom easily. Like, let's get serious here.
At the beginning, I relied on, but after a certain point, I'm like, okay, Crom, whatever, dude. You just sit there.
This is my army, man. This is my army. Dude.
You're my figurehead here, dude. You know, it's okay. Oh my goodness. So, I mean, I am super excited for this game. I'm like a little bummed about everything, but ultimately, King, when my first response to you when you asked me the question through the email, and I said this at the beginning, I'll say it again, with Fire Emblem, I feel like ultimately, I feel so like a damaged, like someone I've been tortured, someone with post-traumatic stress disorder. Every they give me, I'm happy with. As long as they cancel the series, because it feels like when they say things like, oh, don't sell that as many copies, or we're not doing enough. I miss that we don't. I feel like Fire Emblem's the type of series that we should have a home console version of it.
What we're going to be getting, I think, this summer with the Fire Emblem Shin Megami Tensei crossover.
Oh, yeah.
That have they actually announced an official date, is it still all up in the air?
I think it's summer, but they haven't announced when in summer.
Gosh, I every time I grab... push the button, it electrocutes me. So I'm until it actually comes out, because King and I were talking about this on another podcast before. We've been seeing that game advertised since before the Wii U ever was put out. It was one of I thought it was going to be a launch game, for Pete's sake. You know, it is not, and it really pisses me off that we haven't got that game yet.
Yeah, it is out in Japan now, and I heard great things about it. Now it should be hopefully coming out sometime later this year on the Wii U.
They better not bleep us on this one. They really better not, because
here's the thing, because Atlus is the one in charge of developing it, and Atlus has never fucked us over when it comes to their content. Whatever is in the Japanese version will be in the American version.
Okay, thank you for making me feel better about that. And I'm curious. I'll watch some gameplay videos online about it. But I'm curious how the gameplay closer associated to Fire Emblem style or what's
probably
going on.
Probably Shin Megami Tensei.
That's what I was figuring too. That Fire Emblem style and what I love, and I love it. But again, there's something about the actual Fire Emblem Prime game style that when I'm sitting with my Wii U pad, that I can't lie. At times, I'm like, this is a perfect system for Fire Emblem.
No, I totally agree. When I first saw the Wii U, I thought this would be perfect for real-time strategy games, especially RPG.
And there's a lack of really good ones on the Wii U, and there's a few that are okay, but I think there's a lack this generation. I've actually bought a couple of just basic strategy games and simulation games just to try to get...
I basically said, when I saw the Wii U, I said, if you came out with a version of Risk for the Wii U, it would be the greatest video game adaptation of Risk ever.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty pleased with, like, just having... Because I don't have a Wii U, at least not yet. But like having it on my 3DS means I can take it with me wherever I go.
That's excellent. That's an excellent point. I guess I just wish on some level that it got the Smash Brothers treatment, that I could get Verge, even if it's the same game and they find a way to just make it work on both versions, because essentially, and this gets said a lot, but the Wii U can serve as a DS. So, you know, there's nothing you couldn't do on a DS that you couldn't do on a Wii U, essentially.
Absolutely. So, that's what Capcom realized when they did...
Super powerful.
Yeah, well, and that's what Capcom realized when they brought Resident Evil Revelations from the 3DS to the Wii U.
Yeah.
So I hope that in the next generation of Nintendo, they bring us... I would really like it, considering how well Awakenings did, and hopefully how well Fates will do here as well, that Nintendo will take another chance, because I really loved being able to play it on my GameCube and on my actual Wii. I love having the handheld. Don't get me wrong, I agree with you. Taking it places is excellent. Being able to play it anywhere in the go, play it in bed while I'm lying in bed like that too is excellent. But there's something I get out of just my gaming experience that I love sitting down looking at a giant screen of a television. I enjoyed playing these Game Boy Advance versions on my television so much. Mm-hmm. And some of the DS versions too, but the DS emulator isn't quite as good. I feel like I would really love it if the series would go back to console as well, but I don't think... I think that's hopeful thinking by me.
Yeah, it's kind of the same route as Monster Hunter. Like, Monster Hunter was on the consoles for quite a while, but then they ported it to the 3DS, and they were like, I don't think we need to move it anywhere else, guys. It is perfectly fine here.
It's not happening. I'm being the spoiled little kid, and I want my... I'm like, I want it now, Daddy! Give it to me now! You know? Now, Daddy, now! I thought I pushed the effect button. That's why I did it twice.
Yeah.
Sure, the effect was on. But yeah, so I'm just being a little bit of a spoiled kid, and I feel like something like Smash Brothers, I understand why they did it for so you can go to play. But I have zero interest in playing Smash Brothers on my 3DS. So almost to me, I'm like, they did it for Smash Brothers. We don't need a 3DS version of that. And that messed me over for not getting my Ice Climbers, because they can't do the Ice Climbers in the 3DS. Yada yada yada. So for Fire Emblem, I would love just to be able to play it on my Wii U too. But that's just me being a baby.
No, I totally agree.
but ultimately, I do feel like, yeah, we're screwed on it sometimes with the Fire Emblem series, but I'll take what I can get with it.
Yeah,
I guess
at least they're not taking actual story elements out of it. We're getting the full story.
Yes.
And it's not like they took that character out who has the issue, like, you know, the whole, oh, this is wrong, I'm offended issue, you know? She's still in the game, and you can still wed her if you would like to. But they're going to just change up the dialogue or something? I don't know.
Isn't that a little bit... I agree with you, Andrew, and I think ultimately we come to the same point, but I just want to be a picky butthead here. But, you know, you keep that in, and you can't keep the other side of it in. It's not that far of a step. I just think it's almost like slightly insulting to, oh yeah, we'll keep that in, but we can't go that next step with it, which doesn't really seem like a big step to me. It seems like that's just, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I always say, like, hey, I work on the internet and the radio. It's really hard to offend me with things. Like, you can put anything in a game, I'd be like, sure, fine.
Why not?
You know?
But I also feel like, and I think you're the same way, because we've had discussions about this in passing, that yes, I'm accepting of everything. It takes a lot to offend me. I would say the closest from like a television series, South Park's got me a couple times where I'm like, does this offend me? And I'm like, no, shut up, Phil. Like, with like the first time they have like Cartman marching down the street as a Nazi, I'm okay. Ultimately, there's a difference between that and being able to, and I think King, you're the same way too,
right,
that we can enjoy stuff, and then there's the point where we're like, okay, that's not appropriate. We can be like, okay, the American audience is this, that, another thing. I feel like they're being too heavy-handed with the cuts.
Let me tell you what John Cleese and Monty Python told me. It's okay so long as it's not done in a nasty tone.
Yes.
If it's nasty, if it's done for the sake of being nasty, then it's not okay. But if it's done with a way that it's that it's still really funny and it's still entertaining. If it's still...
You just touched upon the important word, or he touched upon the important word there, which is the funny aspect and or good aspect. Just
to
make sure we don't go away from Fire Emblem here, whether it's funny or good, it ultimately... A comedian can say something or a game can get away with something if it does it in an artistic way that, this word gets overused, natural, organic to the story. And ultimately, or what you were saying with comedians, if it's funny. That's why if someone says, one comedian says some offensive thing or someone else says another offensive thing, some people can get away with it because it's funny, or some game could get away with it because they do it in an intellectual or a... emotional way. And something like Fire Emblem, from what I can read and gather from the things that are being cut, it wasn't anything for any poor purposes. It was something for story, or not to cut from the main story, but just to add character is a better way of saying it, not story, character, and character understanding and character development, something I love about the series. So to connect to what Andrew was saying earlier, my only bummer is that someone else gets to enjoy that I don't, but unfortunately, because of the uptight nature of people these days, I almost get it.
This just in, actually, just to be, I just looked this up just to make sure. This just in, before I completely derail the conversation. still on the topic of Fire Emblem, of course. But they just reported that there is no dual audio in Fire Emblem. It will only be an English track, I think it was. Which is fine.
It's fine, but I know a lot of people who will be like, it's not in Japanese, and I can't hear the Japanese voice actors now. I'm so not buying it. Nope.
There is no dual audio, which means, let me take a look at this real quick just to make sure. It actually really doesn't say it. It says, curious, as the option to Japanese voices was probably one of the best parts of Awakening, but alas, for all three versions, they're not there for all three versions of Fate. So yes, it's only English.
That's a bummer, because I gotta be honest, I even someone that I have no clue what they say, I turned on the Japanese versions of the voices while I was playing it, because I don't know, that's just me personally.
Really? I really enjoyed the English dub for Awakening. I thought it was really appropriate.
It was. So, it was good, but I'm saying by the end of my playthroughs. The first playthrough, I kept the English on, but on my further playthroughs, just because I'm tap happy, so for just difference, I put on the.
I should try that on my, because I'm playing my hard mode playthrough on Awakening right now. I should switch it over to Japanese to see what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's just fun to change up for a little while and go back and forth, but I enjoyed it.
All right, so now to derail the conversation, but still on the topic of Fire Emblem, have you been scoping out your waifus already for the new game?
I cannot confirm or deny that, just depending on who's listening to this podcast. If by that you mean my lovely girlfriend, Stephanie. No, of course I have. I have. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah, so both sides have some pretty awesome options, and I'm on the Fire Emblem website right now, like the Nintendo dot, or Fire Emblem dot Nintendo, and they have like the characters for both sides of the Hoshido and the Nor, and this is, they have like the who's, you know, protecting who and who's the guardian of who, who's the prince, who's the princess, whatever. It's not even all the characters in the game. It's just the royal family. There's like tons more characters that they have not even mentioned on the website. It's so cool. And there's so many. And for me, I'm just gonna go out and say it. Yes, I've been scoping out my waifus, and I'm already like prepared. Like, I'm gonna pursue that one, but I'm gonna see how this one works out. I'm gonna have to play it so many times.
Oh. So excited. So excited for this game.
Waifu Simulator Fates.
But yeah, I feel like that's the point. We are excited about Fire Emblem Fates. We are disappointed that there are going to be things that are taken out of it, but I know it's not going to take away anything from the overall story arc that it's going to be delivering to us. And from past experiences with Fire Emblem, we can expect a phenomenal story when it comes to Fates.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. Let's do some little promo stuff for you guys. And Bill, why don't you go first?
Thank you. And if people want to check out more of my stuff, you can check out Phil's Recap and Review, issuesprogram.com, or just search Phil the Issues Guy and you'll find my YouTube channel. Please subscribe. We do post-episode recaps, some of our favorite shows, Game of Thrones, Walking Dead. I started the OJ series this week. Vikings is coming back. Better Call Saul. We're getting into our busy season. So if you guys want to join in for some fun, off-the-cuff recap discussions live right after your programs air. We also do some older programs and some video game stuff. So subscribe to Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. And you can also follow me on Twitter at IGotIssuesMan. Email me any questions or comments at IGotIssuesMan@gmail.com. Thank you, guys.
You're seriously doing the OJ series.
I did it. It's awesome. It's amazing, dude. It's really awesome acting. It's top level stuff. Top level stuff.
Oh, okay. And then Andrew.
Nice. Yes. Thank you for having me on this show. I had a blast. I always love a chance to talk about some Fire Emblem. And I have also subscribed to Issues Program on YouTube, so you should as well. So if you guys want to follow Wicked Anime, you can find us at Wicked Anime, or let's start with the conversation. If you want to join this conversation, you can email us at wickedanimereviews@gmail.com. That's wickedanimereviews, all one word, @gmail.com. You can also find us at facebook.com/wickedanime, where we post news and updates from around the web, where you can also chat with us over there. You can find us at nerdyshow.com/wickedanime, where you can find both the Wicked Anime videos and podcasts, where you can also find the podcast at soundcloud.com/wickedanime and on iTunes. Now back to the videos. If you want to see some videos of Wicked Anime, we got some new ones in production right now. Jonathan is actually sitting right next to me working on a newest video as we speak.
Hi, John.
You can find us at youtube.com/wickedanimereviews. And of course, you can find us all on our crazy portions of the internet. You can find us on Twitter. You can tweet us at @YoWickedAnime, and you can tumble us at wickedanime.tumblr.com. And we even have a Twitch channel that's not really super active, but you can still follow us for when we are active, and that's at @WickedAnnaPlay. I believe that's everything.
Excellent, excellent. You guys, thank you so much for joining me here on No Brews No Weeks. And hey, one more month until Anime Boston.
That's right, yeah. We are already set for Anime Boston, except we haven't got our press passes yet, but our panels are accepted.
I know, that's awesome.
You can go see Wicked Anime panels at Anime Boston.
Yep. There might be a third one added to it, too.
There might be a third one.
Yeah, we won't be able to talk about it until it's official. And I feel like I just fucking jinxed us by saying that.
Now it's going to snow again, Evan. Grant, Evan
caused it to snow again. It's your fault, dude.
I'm sorry.
It's happening on Monday.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, we've got The Pillows, who've got a new album called Stroll and Roll, due out this April. But right now, we're going to spin a track from their 1997 album, Please, Mr. Lost Man, which was the album that reshaped their signature sound into what it's known for today. This is Moon Is Mine.
Album The Big Come Up, that was The Black Keys with I'll Be Your Man. Fans of actor Thomas Jane may recall that this served as the opening theme song to his brilliant comedy series Hung, which sadly got canceled after 3 seasons. Of course, we all know Thomas Jane as the Punisher, probably the best version of Marvel's anti-hero, although we've yet to see how Jon Bernthal deals with him in the new season of Daredevil, which is premiering in March. It's going to be good. I can totally feel it. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. vivid questions, comments. If you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Anime Amino at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbastardbrigade and on facebook.com/landofesh. And also, don't forget about all the other series under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, The Structure Network, and Nerd Crave. We're going to be ending things here with the end theme to one of my favorite anime comedies this winter, Konosuba, God's Blessing on This Wonderful World. If you're a big fan of British comedies, this one will be right up your alley. And, you know, it's actually nice for once to hear a good old folk song for a show that takes place in a Renaissance-y kind of setting. I like a pop song that would, you know, be too out of place in that kind of realm. Here are the seiyuu behind the voices of Aqua, Megumin, and Darkness, Sora Amamiya, Rie Takahashi, and Ai Kayano with the lovely track, Chisana Bokunsha. Until next time, this is your King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Guys, this is Evan Borgo from The Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.